The Legacy, Chapter 10, In the Facets of a Wondrous Gem. Regis and Drizzt pulled up in a small side chamber, its ceiling relatively clear of the persistent stalactites common in this region of the caves, and its entryway low and defensible.
"Should I put out a torch?"
the halfling asked. He stood behind Drizzt as the drow crouched in front of the entryway, listening for sounds of movement in the main tunnel beyond. Drizzt thought for a long moment, then shook his head, knowing that it really did not matter that he and Regis had no chance of escaping these tunnels without further confrontation. Soon after they had fled the battle, Drizzt discovered other enemies paralleling them down side corridors. He knew the dark elf hunting techniques well enough to understand that the trap would not be set with any obvious openings.
"I fight better in the light than my kin, I would guess," Drizzt reasoned.
"At least it wasn't Entreri,"
Regis said lightly, and Drizzt thought the reference to the assassin a strange thing indeed. Would that it were Artemis Entreri, the drow mused. At least then he and Regis would not be surrounded by a horde of drow warriors.
"You did well in dismissing Gwenhiver," Drizzt remarked.
"Would the panther have died?"
Regis asked. Drizzt honestly did not know the answer, but he did not believe that Gwenhiver had been in any mortal peril. He had seen the panther dragged into the stone by a creature of the elemental plane of Earth and plunged into a magically created lake of pure acid. Both times the panther had returned to him, and eventually all of Gwenhiver's wounds had healed. "If the drow and the drider had been allowed to continue," he added, "it is likely that Gwenhiver would have needed more time to mend wounds on the astral plane. I do not believe the panther can be killed away from its home, however, not as long as the figurine survives."
Drizzt looked back to Regis, sincere gratitude on his handsome face. "You did well in sending Gwenhiver away, though, for certainly the panther was suffering at the hands of our enemies."
"I'm glad Gwenhiver would not die,"
Regis commented as Drizzt looked back to the entryway.
"It would not do to lose so valuable a magic item."
Nothing Regis had said since his return from Kalimport, nothing Regis had ever said to Drizzt, seemed so very out of place. No. It went further than that, Drizzt decided as he crouched there, stunned by his halfling companion's callous remark. Gwenhiver and Regis had been more than companions, had been friends for many years. Regis would never refer to Gwenhiver as a magical item. Suddenly, it all began to make sense to the Dark Elf, the halfling's references to Artemis Entreri now, back with the dead dwarves, and back when they had talked of what had happened in Kalimport after Drizzt's departure. Now Drizzt understood the eager way in which Regis measured his responses to remarks about the assassin. And Drizzt understood the viciousness of his fight with Wulfgar. Hadn't the barbarian mentioned that it was Regis who had told him about Drizzt's meeting with Catterbury outside of Mithril Hall?
"What else did you tell Wulfgar?" Drizzt asked, not turning around, not flinching in the least.
"What else did you convince him of with that ruby pendant that hangs about your neck?" The little mace skipped noisily across the floor beside the drow, coming to rest several feet to the front and side of him. Then came another item, a mask that Drizzt himself had worn on his journey to the Southern Empires, a mask that had allowed Drizzt to alter his appearance to that of a surface elf. Wulfgar eyed the outrageous dwarf curiously, not quite sure what to make of this unorthodox battle rager. Brunner had introduced Puent to the barbarian just a minute before, and Wulfgar had gotten the distinct impression that Brunner wasn't overly fond of the black-bearded, smelly dwarf. The dwarf king, to take his seat between Cobble and Catterbury, had then rushed across the audience hall, leaving Wulfgar awkwardly standing by the door. Thibbledwarf Puent, though, seemed perfectly at ease.
"You are a warrior, then?"
Wulfgar asked politely, hoping to find some common ground. Puent's burst of laughter mocked him.
"Warrior!" the bawdy dwarf bellowed. "You mean one who's for fighting with honor?"
Wulfgar shrugged, having no idea of where Puent was leading.
"Is yourself a warrior, big boy?"
Puent asked. Wulfgar puffed at his great chest.
"I am Wulfgar, son of Bjornagar," he began somberly. "I think as much.
Went called across the room to the others.
"And if he was fighting another, and he tripped on his way in and dropped his weapon, he'd stand back and let him pick it up, knowing that you'd win the fight anyway,"
Puent reasoned. Wulfgar shrugged, the answer obvious.
"You realize Puent will surely insult the boy,"
Cobble, leaning on the arm of Brunner's chair, whispered to the Dwarf King.
"Gold against silver on the boy, then,"
Brunner offered quietly.
"Puent's good and wild, but he ain't got the strength to handle that one."
"Not a bit I'd take," Cobble replied. "But if Wulfgar lifts a hand against that one, he's to get stung, not to doubt."
"Good," Catterbury put in unexpectedly. Both Brunner and Cobble turned incredulous looks on the young woman.
"Wulfgar's needin' to get some stingin',"
she explained, with uncharacteristic callousness.
"Well, there you have it, then,"
Puent roared in Wulfgar's face, leading the barbarian across the room as he spoke.
"If I was fighting anyone, if I was fighting yourself and you dropped your weapon, I'd let you bend and pick it up."
Wulfgar nodded in agreement, but jumped back as Puent snapped his dirty finger right under Wulfgar's nose.
"And then I'd put me spike right through the top of your thick head,"
the battle rager finished.
"I ain't no damned stupid warrior, you darned fool. I'm a battle rager, the battle rager, and don't you ever forget that the Puent plays to win."
He snapped his fingers again Wulfgar's way, then stormed past the stunned barbarian, stomping over to stand before Brunner.
"You got some outrageous friends, but I'm not surprised,"
Puent roared at Brunner. He regarded Catterbury with his broken tooth smile.
"But your girl'd be a cute one if you could find a way to put some hair on her chin."
"Take it as a compliment,"
Cobble quietly offered to Catterbury, who only shrugged and smiled with amusement.
"Battle hammers always kept a soft spot in their hearts for them that wasn't dwarfkin,"
Puent went on, directing his remarks at Wulfgar as the tall man moved beside him.
"And we let 'em be our kings anyway. Never could figure that part out."
Brunner's knuckles whitened under the strain as he grabbed hard on the arms of his chair, trying to control himself. Catterbury dropped a hand over his, and when he looked to her tolerant eyes, the storm quickly passed.
"Speaking of that,"
Puent went on,
"there's an ugly rumor making the rounds that you've got a drow elf standing beside ye. There's be any truth to that?"
Brunner's first reaction was one of anger. Always the dwarf had been defensive about his oft-maligned drow friend. Catterbury spoke first, though, her words directed more to her father than to Puent, a reminder to Brunner that Drizzt's skin had thickened and that he could take care of himself.
"You'll be meeting the drow soon enough," she told the battle ranger. "Sure, and that one's a warrior to fit your description, if ever there was one."
Puent roared a derisive laughter, but it faded as Catterby continued.
"If you came at him to start a fight, but dropped your pointy helm, he'd pick it up for you and put it back on your head,"
she explained.
"Of course, then he'd take it back off and stuff it down the back of your pants and give you a few boots just so you'd get the point."
The battle rager's lips seemed to tie themselves up in a neat knot. For the first time in many days, Wulfgar seemed to approve completely of Catterby's reasoning, and the nod of his head, and of Brunner's and of Cobble's, was certainly appreciative when Puent made no move to answer.
"How long will Drizzt be gone?"
the barbarian asked, to change the subject before Puent could find his irritating voice.
"The tunnels are long," Brunner replied. "He will return for the ceremony?"
Wulfgar asked, and there seemed to Catterby to be some ambivalence in his tone, an uncertainty of which answer he would prefer.
"Be sure that he will,"
the young woman put in evenly, "for be sure that there'll be no weddin' until Drizzt is back from the tunnels." She looked at Brunner, thoroughly squashing his protests before he even uttered them.
"And I'm not for caring if all the kings and queens of the north are kept waitin' for a month."
Wulfgar seemed on the verge of an explosion, but he was wise enough to direct his mounting anger away from volatile Catterby.
"I should have gone with him,"
he growled at Brunner.
"Why did you send Regis along? What good might the halfling do if enemies are found?"
The ferocity of the lad's tone caught Brunner off his guard.
"He's right,"
Catterby snapped in her father's ear. Not that she wanted to agree with Wulfgar on any point, but that she, like Wulfgar, saw the opportunity to vent her anger openly. Brunner sank back in his chair, his dark eyes darting from one to the other.
"Dwarves is lost, is all," he said.
"Even if that's true, what will Regis do but slow down the drow?"
Catterby reasoned.
"He said he'd find a way to fit in,"
Brunner protested.
"Who said?"
Catterby demanded.
"Rumblebelly!"
shouted her flustered father.
"He did not even wish to go," Wulfgar shot back.
"Did too!"
Brunner roared, leaping up from his seat and pushing the leaning Wulfgar back two steps with a sturdy forearm slam to the lad's chest.
"'Twas Rumblebelly that told me to send him along with the drow, I tell ye!"
"Regis was here with yourself when you got the news of the missing dwarves," Catterby reasoned. "You didn't say a thing about Regis telling you to send him."
"He told me before that," Brunner answered. "He told—"
The dwarf stopped, realizing the illogic of it all. Somehow, somewhere in the back of his mind, he remembered Regis explaining that he and Drizzt should go after the missing dwarves. But how could that be, since Brunner had made the decision as soon as they all learned that the dwarves were missing?
"Have you been tasting the holy water again, me king?"
Cobble asked respectfully but firmly. Brunner held his hand out, motioning for them all to be quiet while he sought his recollections. He remembered Regis's words distinctly and knew he was not imagining them, but no images accompanied the memory, no scene where he could place the halfling and thus straighten out the apparent time discrepancy. Then an image came to Brunner, a swirling array of shining facets spiraling down and drawing him with them into the depths of a wondrous ruby.
"Rumblebelly told me that the dwarves be missing,"
Brunner said slowly and clearly, his eyes closed as he forced the memory from his subconscious.
"He told me I should send himself and Drizzt to find them, that them two alone would get the dwarves back to the hall safely."
"Regis could not have known,"
Cobble reasoned, obviously doubting Brunner's words.
"And even if he did, the little one would not have wished to go along to find them,"
Wulfgar added, equally doubtful.
"Is this a dream?"
"Not a dream,"
Brunner growled.
"He told me, with that ruby of his."
Brunner's face screwed up as he tried to remember, tried to call upon his dwarven resistance to magic to fight past the stubborn mental block.
"Regis would not," Wulfgar started to say again,
but this time it was Catterby, knowing the truth of her father's claims, who interrupted them.
"Unless it wasn't really Regis,"
she offered, and her own words made her mouth drop open with the terrible implications. The three had been through so much beside Drizzt, and they all knew well that the drow had many evil and powerful enemies, one in particular who would have had the wiles to create such an elaborate deception. Wulfgar looked equally stricken, at a loss. But Brunner was fast to react. He jumped down from the throne and blasted between Wulfgar and Pwent, nearly knocking them both from their feet. Catterby went right behind, Wulfgar turning to follow.
"What in the head of a goblin are them three talking about?"
Pwent demanded of Cobble as the cleric too rambled past.
"A fight,"
Cobble replied, knowing well how to deflect any of Pwent's demands for a lengthy explanation. Thibbledorf Pwent dropped to one knee and rolled his burly shoulder, punching his fist triumphantly out in front of him.
"Yeah!"
he screamed in glee.
"Sure and it's good to be back serving a battlehammer!"
"Are you in league with them, or is this a terrible coincidence?" Drizzt asked dryly, still refusing to turn about and give Artemis and Treri the satisfaction of viewing his torment.
"I do not believe in coincidence,"
came the predictable answer. Finally, Drizzt did turn around to see his dreaded rival, the human assassin Artemis Entreri, standing easily at the ready, fine sword in one hand, jeweled dagger in the other. The torch, still burning, lay at his feet. The magical transformation from halfling to human had been complete, clothing included, and this fact somewhat confused Drizzt. When Drizzt had used the mask, it had done no more than alter the color of his skin and hair, and his amazement now was obvious on his face.
"You should better learn the value of magic items before you so casually toss them aside," the assassin said to him, understanding the look.
There was a note of truth in Entreri's words, apparently, but Drizzt had never regretted leaving the magical mask in Kellenport. Under its protective camouflage, the Dark Elf had walked freely, without persecution, among the other races. But under that mask, Drizzt Duarden had walked in a lie. "You could have killed me in the goblin fight, or 100 other times since your return to Mithril Hall," Drizzt reasoned. "Why the elaborate games?"
"The sweeter comes my victory."
"You wish me to draw my weapons, to continue the fight we began in Kalimport's sewers?"
"Our fight began long before there, Drizzt Duarden," the assassin chided.
He casually poked his blade at Drizzt, who neither flinched nor reached for his scimitars, as the fine sword nicked him on the cheek.
"You and I," Entreri continued, and he began to circle to Drizzt's side, "have been mortal enemies from the day we learned of each other, each an insult to the other's code of fighting. I mock your principles, and you insult my discipline."
"Discipline and emptiness are not the same," Drizzt answered. "You are but a shell that knows how to use weapons. There is no substance in that."
"Good," Entreri purred, tapping Drizzt's hip with his sword. "I feel your anger, Drow, though you try to desperately hide it. Draw your weapons and let it loose. Teach me with your skills what your words cannot."
"You still do not understand," Drizzt replied calmly, his head cocked to the side and a smug, sincere grin widening on his face. "I would not presume to teach you anything. Artemis Entreri is not worth my time." Entreri's eyes flared in sudden rage, and he leaped forward, sword high, as if to strike Drizzt down. Drizzt didn't flinch.
"Draw your weapons, and let us continue our destiny," Entreri growled, falling back and leveling his sword at the drow's eye level.
"Fall on your own blade, and meet the only end you'll ever deserve," Drizzt replied.
"I have your cat," Entreri snapped. "You must fight me, or Gwenhiver will be mine."
"You forget that we are both soon to be captured, or killed," Drizzt reasoned. "Do not underestimate the hunting skills of my people."
"Then fight for the halfling,"
Entreri growled. Drizzt's expression showed that the assassin had hit a nerve.
"Had you forgotten about Regis?"
Entreri teased.
"I have not killed him, but he will die where he is, and only I know of that place. I will tell you only if you win. Fight, Drizzt Duarden, if for no better reason than to save the life of that miserable halfling."
Entreri's sword made a lazy thrust at Drizzt's face again, but this time it went flying wide to the side as a scimitar leaped out and banged it away. Entreri sent it right back in and followed it closely with a dagger strike that nearly found a hole in Drizzt's defenses. "I thought you had lost the use of an arm and an eye," the drow said.
"I lied,"
Entreri replied, stepping back and holding his weapons out wide.
"Must I be punished?"
Drizzt let his scimitars answer for him, rushing in quickly and chopping repeatedly, left and right, then right a third time as his left blade twirled up above his head and came straight ahead in a blinding thrust. Sword and dagger countering, the assassin batted aside each attack. The fight became a dance, movements too synchronous, too much in perfect harmony for either to gain an advantage. Drizzt, knowing that time was running out for him, and more particularly for Regis, maneuvered near the low-burning torch, then stomped down on it, rolling it about and smothering the flames, stealing the light. He thought his racial night vision would give him the edge, but when he looked at Entreri, he saw the assassin's eyes glowing in the telltale red of infravision.
"You thought the mask gave me this ability," Entreri reasoned. not true, you see. It was a gift from my dark elf associate, a mercenary not so unlike myself.
His words ended at the beginning of his charge, his sword coming high and forcing Driz to twist and duck to the side. Driz grinned in satisfaction as Twinkle came up, the scimitar ringing as it knocked Entreri's dagger aside. A subtle twist put Driz back on the offensive, Twinkle coming around Entreri's dagger hand and slicing at the assassin's exposed chest. Entreri already had begun to roll, straight backward, and the blade never got close. In the dim light of Twinkle's glow, their skin colors lost in a common gray, they seemed alike, brethren come from the same mold. Entreri approved of that perception, but Driz surely did not. To the renegade drow, Artemis Entreri seemed a dark mirror of his soul, an image of what he might have become had he remained in Menza Baranzin beside the amoral kin. Driz's rage led him now in another series of dazzling thrusts and cunning sweeping cuts, his curved blades weaving tight lines about each other, hitting at Entreri from different angles with every attack. Sword and dagger played equally well, blocking and returning cunning counters, then blocking the countering counters that the assassin seemed to anticipate with ease. Driz could fight him forever, would never tire with Entreri standing opposite him. But then he felt a sting in his calf and a burning, then numbing sensation emanating throughout his leg. In seconds, he felt his reflexes slowing. He wanted to shout out the truth, to steal the moment of Entreri's victory, for surely the assassin, who so desired to beat Drizzt in honest combat, would not appreciate a win brought on by the poisoned quarrel of hidden enemies. Twinkle's tip dipped to the floor, and Drizzt realized he was dangerously vulnerable. Entreri fell first, similarly poisoned. Drizzt sensed the dark shapes slipping in through the low door and wondered if he had time to bash in the fallen assassin's skull before he, too, slumped to the ground. He heard one of his own blades, then the other, clang to the floor, but he was not aware that he had dropped them. Then he was down, his eyes closed, his dimming consciousness trying to fathom the extent of this disaster, the many implications for his friends and for him. His thoughts were not eased with the last words he heard. A voice in the drow language, a voice from somewhere in his past.
"Sleep well, my lost brother."